All right, guys, we're recording. So it is Friday night. What's that noise?
Eric just walked in and said hi. Oh,
okay, have him tell him to keep it down. It's Friday evening, January 22nd, and we're going to attempt to do our first open group fan and past guest Zoom meeting. And I'm here with Deborah.
Hi there.
And it's about 10 to 5. We're going to start letting people in at 5. We just thought we'd start early and start catching up with you guys. How's your week been?
Very non-eventful.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My week's been pretty good. The weather here was so nice this week. It's crazy. I think it's the longest it's ever been consecutively during the winter that it hasn't rained since I've lived here. So I think it might have rained overnight one of the nights, but during the daytime it was not rainy the whole week.
Wow. So, nice. Yeah, and,
like, the sun was out today. It was 55 degrees.
Wow. I am San Rafael is what, 2 miles away from where I live, right?
Yeah.
It's 83 degrees. There's, you know, these little mini
83
climate.
In San Rafael?
83 is unbelievable.
What's going on, buddy? Are you there? Can you hear us?
Okay.
There he is.
You're there.
Hi.
Hey.
We're recording. Tell everybody who you are.
I am Dean Reiner.
And how do I know you?
How do we know each other? We met each other through the podcast world.
What's your podcast?
My podcast. That's probably a good place to start. I'm Dean Reiner with the Up is Down podcast.
And that's Deborah up in the corner.
Hi, Deborah. Good to meet you, sort of.
Yeah, same here.
It's good to see your face.
Yeah. We've spoken before. We just haven't seen each other. Is that correct?
That's correct.
When have you spoken?
We've never spoken.
Oh, okay. I take it back.
Yeah.
Well, gosh, you're a living legend. I thought I knew you.
That's very flattering.
Dean's a fellow Oregonian, and he has a podcast called Up Is Down, and it was pretty instrumental in us getting our podcast off the ground. So, we'll always respect you for that one. Your podcast is really good. I just finished up with your David Weiss episode, and it was great.
Thanks, man.
David Weiss is an amazing guy, and he's been on tour on the podcast circuit.
Yeah.
And it was cool because he kind of has his spiel, which is a good one, but you realized that and kind of forced him into the opposite, or not the opposite, but a different side of the conversation, kind of. And he was totally fine with it. You know, he did a great job. It was awesome. But you guys concentrated on more of why the lie.
Yeah, the esoteric value of the bigger flat earth conversation, which frankly doesn't really, I'm sorry to say, guys, it doesn't really interest me that much. I don't really care if the earth is round or flat. I'm more concerned about the social engineering aspects of it and the really deep esoteric value of such a constructed history, mythology, false history. I just think it's really, really fascinating. I think there's a lot of stuff there. And so after I've heard him speak quite a bit, and I heard him on your show, and I just didn't, that's the thing about this little tiny ecosystem of podcasting that we find ourselves in as content creators, I guess, as just artists, there is a bit of incestuous nature to the whole thing. And we kind of get passed around in circles, and it becomes a bit of a vacuum. And I've had guests on my shows, and I have another one coming up pretty soon that it's exciting and it's cool, and it's all connections, and it's all valuable connections. But at some point there's a feeling of like being that girl passed around the room.
You know, when, do you know how that feels, Deborah?
I might have once, one time, but I'm no longer.
No, no more.
Yeah. No more. I just, I just don't, I'm not a fan of sloppy seconds, and I don't want to give space or time to someone that I really am interested in. But if they're just shooting out a pitch of something that they're selling, whether it's a book or in David's case, I know he's trying to sell an app, but I also know that he's beholden to a lot more information than just what he's most notorious for, which is the flat earth argument. And so I heard him speak.
Yeah. Cause
that Tripoli show, and it blew my mind about Las Vegas shooting. And then I started digging into his other work, and there's this whole other Muammar Gaddafi stuff that just opened up my mind to an entirely different story about what happened in Libya 10 years ago. And that's nothing at all related necessarily to flat earth, but it was within the nuance of the conversation that was like a crack that I was able to slip into. And now I'm like way down the rabbit hole of Muammar Gaddafi.
Yeah, that stuff. I watched that stuff you sent me that was on the show notes, and it's pretty crazy.
It's pretty wild.
Can you break it down in 5 minutes for Deborah real quick?
I could probably break it down in less than that.
Yeah,
You know, I mean, what David Weiss helped me understand and showed me with just one little 5 minute long video was that the water is the source of all life on earth as we know, and it's within everything, and that there's water underneath the earth that we also know about. But there was an attempt made 40 years ago to create a river in the northeastern part of Africa where Libya is located. He literally created this river and was pumping water up out of the bowels of the earth that would hydrate and create organic farms all over this completely barren desert landscape for hundreds and hundreds of miles, and thus provide a source of gardening and food and water and hydration and sustenance and survival for a whole mass of people, whole populations and countries worth of people. And it was a 40-year-long project. It was the biggest project ever started of that capacity, as far as I understand. And right as it was just about done, our military bombed the shit out of it.
Under what regime?
I believe it was Obama.
Yep. Black
and
Jesus.
They used depleted uranium bombs, no less. So that rendered the earth completely fucked up for God knows how long. So, and it's interesting, I was looking into that too. And as of the last 5 years, there's a massive water shortage in Libya. Not necessarily as a result of that, but I mean, there was water there, you know, and he was literally giving everyone livestock, tractors, grain, seeds, land.
Like 50 acres or something. Everybody would get 50 acres
for free. He had this whole other philosophy that blended socialism and capitalism together very, very interestingly. And he kind of modeled it after Chairman Mao.
He socialized the oil.
Yeah, he socialized the oil. He socialized the power. He socialized everything. And but at the same time, there's a whole other side of him that we don't quite understand. And what we've been shown through the mainstream media is that he's this brutal dictator who rules by force. But then you see this guy driving around and people are running out of their houses just to wave at him, just to drive alongside of him, because they seem to love this guy, Muammar Gaddafi. He's just a very strange, very eccentric guy, hated by everyone in the West, hated by everyone around him, I think, because he chose, ultimately, his decision was to get off of the central banking system he was going to create, because he had
petrodollar, right?
Yeah, he had 140 million pounds, I think, of gold, and he was going to create his own currency called the gold dinar, which was going to be a separation point from the central banking system and, of course, the Western powers of the world and all the other competing nations around him in Saudi Arabia. Well, not Saudi, but in the Middle East and in Northern Africa, they didn't want that because all those people are beholden to the central banks. And so there was so much more. There was so much motivation to take him out. And so they definitely achieved that goal, but not after they destroyed the man-made river, it's just an interesting story. It's a really interesting story.
So, yeah, we implemented a regime change over there. He gets killed in a horrifically brutal way that I don't even like talking about in the streets of Libya.
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
I've mentioned it on the show to you before, Deborah. Do you know what we're talking about?
Can I come in?
He got stabbed with a bayonet in like the most painful place that you could imagine being stabbed with a bayonet.
Yeah, after he was shot and beaten by
dragged through the streets
by in broad daylight by hundreds of people. And there's some argument that those people weren't even Libyan citizens of that region that they were farmed in, because there was a whole nother part of the country that were compromised by Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
And he was totally against Al-Qaeda. He wanted nothing to do with the Taliban. He was basically like an ally, except for he had nothing but detestment for the United States, for good reason. But it was pretty brutal how he came to an end.
So he gets killed, creates sort of a power vacuum over there. And as we speak right now, there's open air slave trades.
There's open air slave trades.
Black people being sold in the streets of Libya for $400.
Yeah, so. within a couple of years of him being deposed of,
It
completely fell into the hands of Al-Qaeda, and which of course we created. We backed the rebel forces, which were Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
During this
moderate
whole time.
Rebels.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Peaceful protesters. Yeah. Mostly.
That's what they call them, though. Moderate rebels, I think, is the term that they used.
Yeah. So it's just funny because while this civil war, quote unquote, was taking place in Libya, as I understand it, and I know very little about it. So, I mean, you can hold me to the fire for that because I don't really know. But by all appearances, there was a civil war and the oppositional forces were essentially influenced by Al-Qaeda for years. Hmm. And Gaddafi hated Al-Qaeda, wanted nothing to do with them, but knew that he couldn't really stop them. All he could do is try to suppress them. And so those forces grew bigger and bigger as rebels of this dictatorship, this regime. And of course, we were funding them with NATO weapons, not just guns, but like heavy artillery, anti-aircraft, anti-tank missiles, and all kinds of heavy armaments and what do they call that, ordnance, that just showed up overnight. And these people didn't know how to use these weapons, but there's video all over the place on YouTube of our military instructing the people, the moderate rebels of Libya at the time, on how to use these weapons, because there weren't any gun shops in Libya. It wasn't like America where you can go and buy assault rifles. These things, all they really had were like the old Russian AK-47s. They weren't equipped to fight back against us or anyone else. So we made sure to arm them with billions of dollars of weapons that we pay for. So anyway, that's a whole nother rabbit hole.
Well, hopefully you go down that rabbit hole and maybe
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah,
David's gonna come on to do a whole episode or something with us about it.
Yeah, David's gonna get back to me in a couple weeks and when he's done hawking his wares. And we're going to go down the Libyan rabbit hole, which sounds pretty cool. Because there's still a lot of information out there that it seems like there are two very full conflicting stories about what happened in Libya. There's a lot of videos about how he was this amazing person where everyone loved him and he had no resistance, whatever. He was like a friendly autocrat. And then there's the other side of it, was that he was this brutal dictator who ruled by force and would just kill anyone who opposed him, anyone who talked shit about him. But then you see videos of him driving around and people are just running out in the streets. You know, I mean, they're fighting for him. They're dying for him. It's very interesting, that guy. Mm-hmm. But no one cares about Muammar Gaddafi anymore because it was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
We got coronavirus.
It could be a little bit of both of those perspectives, you know, so you never know.
For sure.
But we got a bunch of people in the waiting room. Should we let them in?
Yeah, I don't care.
All right. Here they come. Admit. Yeah. What's going on, guys?
What's happening?
How's it going?
Hello.
There's my buddy Jeff Souza on the left, Oakland, California. Why don't we go around? What's up, Sean? How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Hello.
We got Matt Diaz. Can you hear us, Matt? And Moto E, what's going on, bro? Can you hear us?
Yeah, how's my audio coming through?
Good. Not too bad, man.
All right, if a sudden gust of wind or an ambulance comes through, I'm just going to mute it.
Okay, sounds good. Well, welcome, guys. Let's see how we've been recording for about 10 minutes. We're live right now. So let's kind of just go around the horn and introduce ourselves. You go first, Deborah.
I'm Deborah. I'm Adam's mother-in-law from Corte Madera, California. Got dragged kicking and screaming into this podcast business by the man over there. Glad to be here.
Cool. I'm Adam. Go, Jeff.
I'm Jeff. I'm an alcoholic. Oh, this is a different meeting.
Yeah. Fix your phone. You're sideways. You're
sideways.
Oh, no. Hold on.
All right, Sean, go for it.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go.
All right.
Sean, go.
I'm Sean Dustin. I'm from actually the Bay Area. I'm living currently in Oakley, California. And I host a podcast called Nowhere to Go But Up.
Right on, man. Good to meet you.
You're a veteran of Deborah Gets Red Pilled, so welcome back.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, Moto E, go for it.
Can you hear us?
Did you say Moto E?
Yeah, go for it, bro.
Yeah, sorry. My connection was a little... I'm Paul from the Sofa Bab Show, SOFABAB show. My buddy Matt Diaz turned me on to you a couple days ago. I started with the very first episode, then I skipped around a few episodes. I really dig what you're doing. And then when I found out that fans of the show could come on this Friday, I'm like, bro, I'm there.
Right on. So well, what up? Hopefully you didn't you listened to some other stuff past a little bit further past the first episode, because that one was pretty rough. So where are you so at? Where do you live at, Paul?
I'm in Denver.
Cool. Right on. All right. We got one more coming on. There's Matt. Matt, can you hear us? No, we got nothing. All right. Well, where should we start, guys? Anything interesting going on?
Yeah, man, nothing. nothing but 2020 season two. It's been pretty cool so far.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, 8,000 people have died because of Joe Biden's mismanagement of this fucking pandemic. So, you know.
I know. Unbelievable.
We're on the verge of becoming, domestic terrorists.
Yeah.
That's great to look forward to.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something that's interesting is that it's... what do you think, if you guys have any opinions on it, what do you think the motivation is to push this huge agenda of like the white patriot domestic terrorist? Because that's kind of seems like what's going on right now.
Woo!
No, nobody. What do you think, Deborah?
I don't know. It's just more of the same. But let's, you know, ground all the new players in, establish the new regime. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know
what you mean, but
I kind of get the feeling that it's just another arm of the surveillance state to expand and consolidate surveillance over people and boost more tech platforms to just data mine and allocate and divide people and create another unseen enemy and another uncontrollable force that needs to be baited down and brought to heel. And it's going to be, you know, your father-in-law, it's going to be your brother, it's going to be likely every one of us. I mean, there's no doubt that every single one of us are on a list. I mean, there's no real safe place to hide, but hiding isn't an option. You know, so I tend to have faith that there's going to be enough pushback and resilience that it's not going to be anything that we can't withstand. And I think eventually it will reveal itself to be just another hoax, another constructed hoax.
Yeah. Yeah. That's up. Uh-oh. Yeah, what do you think, Sean?
Well, I mean, hopefully it doesn't. I mean, like, like you were saying, that if there will be enough pushback from people, and then, you know, once people start really realizing what's going on, because I mean, there's still a huge majority of people that are still plugged into the mainstream media narratives. And, you know, it doesn't matter what you say, you can show them all the videos you want. They won't open them. But it's going to take like something serious, like maybe their brother or their family member getting taken away for speaking their voice. And then it hits home. It's like, well, wait a minute. He really wasn't saying anything that bad. So what's going on here? And the more of that comes out and comes up, people will start to band together and be like, no, this is not okay. Hopefully it doesn't get to that point. But I mean, CNN's talking about, you know, trying to force any type of YouTube news that we consume. Like I do, I watch, you know, Ryan Dawson, I watch Jason Burmess, you know, where they're basically reporting the facts. I mean, they're not giving you anything that you can't go and look at yourself. I mean, these are things that they've dug up and they've researched and they're showing the people that the mainstream media isn't showing anymore. And so that's scary in itself. So hopefully it doesn't take hold. You know, you got a lot of people saying that the military is now taking over, that's took over the country. I was talking, well, Mel Kay mentioned that. And I heard something about it, and somebody sent me something about it as well. At this point, I don't know what to believe, man.
Yeah. And then, so they've got all those troops in D.C., and they said they like had to personally vet all of them to make sure that they weren't like Trump supporters or something like that. Isn't that the case?
I think that's bullshit.
Yeah. You don't think that's real, Dean?
No, I don't think it's real at all.
But they said it just to make people feel.
Oh yeah. Feel dude, it gets your little lizard brain all active and people get all excited about it. And then they click and read and it doesn't matter what the fuck it is. As long as we're excited and clicking and reading, that's data. That is data just piling up. People are cashing in on that. So they'll just throw these crumbs at people. I don't think most of what we're seeing on any sort of platform is real.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's all deep fakes. I just think that there's too much money to be made in falsifying reality in any way. And there's so much to go around for everybody. I don't really think that, like, why would they care? How would they know? How could they possibly vet 25,000 people in a matter of a couple of days? What does that even mean?
Yeah.
What is vetting then? they take a test, they answer some questions. Everybody lies.
Yeah. They come back like something like, oh, they had to pull three soldiers.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. When you actually think about it, you're like, oh, they're going to, when you break it down, like, so they're going to vet these people. What does that even mean? So they're all going to be set in a little dark room with no windows. And ask questions about their personal lives.
Yeah, like a good cop, bad cop type situation.
No, but they know that no one's actually going to like, it doesn't even matter if we do think about it. They're just going to have another one for us in 5 minutes anyway. There'll be another headline, another little tagline that's going to get people excited and their little lizard brains and their amygdalas are going to swell and they're going to be like, oh my God, I knew it. White terrorists, all the military is white terrorists.
Yeah, it's like 50% of the country or 60% of the country, male population is terrorists. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, and just jumping off that for a minute, like what happens? Let's just say that was actually real, that there were 65% of the country, a hard majority of people were suddenly revealed to be white terrorists. Where does that put the so-called minority? What would they do? If they're obviously outnumbered, you know, if this rhetorical fallacy was real, what would they do? They couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
What would they do? I mean, shut everything off. That's been the other big fear. Like there's going to be a giant internet blackout like any day now. And it's like, you know, man, I bit that for a minute and I went and filled up all my gas cans and I bought like a bunch of water and, you know, I double checked my wood pile and I'm like, and then, you know, it just never comes. I fell for it for like a day, spent $100 on some resources. And I'm like, oh my God, dude, but it's resources I would have needed anytime.
Yeah. You
know, anyway.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I got the fuck out of Portland. You know, I ran as fast as I could to a place. I got super lucky and I relocated, not because of any sort of transition of power, but because Portland was becoming so completely communist in every single way. And it fit right along with my disdain I've had for the city that's been building for 10 years anyway. So I was like, if there was ever a better time, you know, there had never been a better time to move. And we just happened to pull the trigger right at the right time.
Yeah, you got out. Yeah. So we got Matt back at the bottom here. Matt Diaz.
Oh, yeah.
What's going on, bro?
Nothing, man. Just chilling, man. Just happy to be here. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm here. I live down here in Houston.
Yeah.
And everything's normal here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I listen to everything, and I listen to you guys. I've heard all over the place. It sounds like everything's crazy everywhere, but here, just
extra.
Just normal.
Yeah. Yeah, just Texas. Normal. Texas, man. Houston. I've never been to Houston. I heard it's the Oakland of Texas, though. So
yeah, it's not the prettiest city, but
yeah, hey,
we're doing okay down here. We're just living, man. It's crazy, you know. Just listening to what y'all are saying, I think the re-education camps is really what's next. I've been saying that for a while. Like, you can almost see it coming. Like, they're just gonna group us into one. You know, they're gonna put us into one group, and re-education's coming. I hate to say it, but
yeah,
just the way it looks.
What do you think that would look like, Matt?
Well, first it'll probably start with a FEMA camp, and they'll be like, "Hey, we're gonna save everybody." And they're just gonna group you in, and I think it'll be very silent, a lot like they do in China. I mean, they've already been grouping us in with all the data we give. You know, that's why I've been using DuckDuckGo. I use DuckDuckGo. I use Brave. I avoid Google, because I think that's where it's all going to start, you know. And I'm on Twitter. That's about the only place I am, but I stay quiet, and I just fucking troll everybody. I'm just a troll.
That's what Twitter's good for these days. That's about it. But you got
to
watch.
I just troll everyone, and I don't know. It's interesting to think what's going to happen, but I think there's definitely a good possibility that we're going to be re-educated.
Yeah.
And it's sad to think. And I think you guys are doing the right thing. You just got to get off the grid. And, you know, Adam, I've listened to, I think, all your episodes, really.
Wow. Thanks, man.
And you out there with your chickens and,
yeah,
you know, getting out of town. It's smart, you know. And I joined freedomcells.org.
All right.
This past, like, 2 weeks ago, because you really inspired me. And I don't know. That's why. You know, that's why I got on here, because I think it's very cool, like, what you're doing. Like,
yeah, I think I think Freedom Cells should probably be pretty strong in your area, because that's where Derek Bros is originally from.
And, yeah, and he did a meetup last night. I wasn't able to make it. I get up early. I do vending, so, and not vending, but I'm a vendor, so I get up early. I get up at 2 a.m. So
yeah,
you know, it's interesting, though. But he was down here. They did a meetup last night on, you know, downtown, whatever. But I seen him, and I was like, damn, I wish I could get down there.
Yeah, yeah. He's,
you know, but
he's
the, in, the,
go ahead.
I mean, least I can do is just fucking come out and speak my mind and tell the people I know that, you know, this is what we're going to do. You got to get out of town. It is what it is. You got to get out right now.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't know. I don't think I'm going to be able to do it. I'm not in Portland proper, but I'm pretty close. But like, my house is worth a ton of money now, but everything else that I'd want to buy is a ton of money now. So
yeah.
Lower how's it? Your standards.
Yeah.
Lower your standards.
But getting out of my standards, the standards that I have, it has to be a piece of land, you know. So
not impossible, man. Not impossible.
Well, I know it's not impossible.
Just build that bow.
I've been talking about with my fiance. We just gotta get out, drill a well. If you can drill a well, everything else will come, you know. And down here in Texas, we're lucky because there's a lot of land.
Yeah.
You know, and you can get out of town. You can be an hour out and you'll be far away.
Yeah.
You will be.
Yeah.
I mean, I drive an hour every day just to get to the city, and I live in the city.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I know how that goes. Yeah, I went out and shot rifles this morning at my rifle club, and it's, you know, it's half an hour from my house, but it's like, it's out in the country, you know, so yeah, I want to get out there. But how's everything looking in Oakland, Jeff?
Same as when you left it, just with masks.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I don't know. I'm over it. I, you know, like we've talked about it before, it was fun when it was fun, but
it was the most fun, man. It was the most fun when I was 24 years old, you know.
That's when everything is the most
crashing fun. Motorcycles and getting beat up at getting beat up at the bars and stuff, you know, but that all goes away after you hit 30 and you get that testosterone drop, you know. It's not as much fun anymore unless you got substances that can make it more fun, and we don't do that anymore. So,
you know, and I could afford to live here. I had like a pretty cool warehouse that I lived in, you know, when I was 28 years old, and you can't do that anymore. And you know, it's funny, like I never thought of myself as like that fearful of a person, certainly not of other people, you know. But man, it makes me nervous to speak my mind about the state of the world and politics in public around here. You know?
Why is that? Why?
Well, just because you're outnumbered. Like, you're way outnumbered. If I go...
I get it.
We have some friends that are, you know, fairly conservative, which I guess I would call myself at this point. But most people in the Bay Area are not like that. You know, my wife and I, my fiance and I say it all the time, you know, like, hey, these are not our people. You know, we're here. She went to school here. I chased a girl out here from the East Coast 30 years ago. Like, it was fun for a while. Like, I made a lot of good friends, but really increasingly they're not my people here, you know?
Yeah. Hey, Deborah, do you feel the same? Do you still feel like you're right where you need to be?
I don't know where else I would go other than to move into Adam's spare bedroom. he's looking forward to that. I can tell you that much. You know, I live in a place, it's super expensive. I mean, we bought our house 35 years ago, and
should be almost paid off then by now, right?
Yep.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I live in a beautiful area. The physical, you know, I'm close to the ocean, which I super appreciate. I'm close to the mountains. I'm in the redwoods. It's got a lot of scenic beauty. I have my tribe here. So I don't feel compelled to get up and move.
Sure, sure. That's not really what I mean. I think more what I was trying to say was, do you still feel at home in the community and that you don't have to worry about speaking your mind in the same way that Jeff does?
I have a different community, I think, is what it, you know, I'm a different age group than you guys. And we, you know, the people that I associate with, which of course has dwindled, you know, with this COVID crap, but, you know, I don't speak openly about everything that we discuss on this podcast because people would not understand.
Oh yeah, that's a fact. And you can't, because it's social suicide to do that.
It's amazing to me how much of a us versus them these conversations just make people kind of crazy. You know, it's hard to listen. If you don't buy into it even a little bit, it seems to be very hard for people to just listen and accept that there's other ways of looking at things.
Do you have like a naturally inquisitive disposition, in that when you talk to people, do you kind of like have your feelers open so that you can kind of gauge where they're at by the soft sell approach in your conversations with them?
Well, sure. But, you know, most of the people that I associate with, I've known, you know, 40 years or more. But yeah, I.
That's how you can tell you're not a piece of shit, because my most recent friends aren't from very long ago.
I don't know. I think you sort of attract, you are attracted to people who have similar interests, and there, you know, there's so many things. I mean, I have, you know, my kids, those are a big priority. So, you know, I have friends from a bazillion years ago that we raised our kids together. So we have that in common. And then I have other friends that, you know, are a little bit, you know, little tiny bit politically, you know, I live in Marin County. It's a very liberal Democrat, you know, we all kind of look the same. We all kind of talk the same. We all kind of act the same. So I'm kind of slipping in and out of that. And I've had some moments of real kind of anguish about it. Because it's really hard to explain to my friends who really want to challenge me on what I'm doing with this podcast. And you know, it's for me, you know, they want all the background information so they can understand it. I can't give the background information because I don't understand it. You know, I don't get it fully yet. And
tell
so
them to listen to the show.
Yeah. Do they want receipts? Like, do they want documents? Like some of the stuff that, you know, Adam might talk about, or me or any of the other shows, like try to bring receipts.
They want backup information. I guess that's what you mean by receipts.
They want to see it on the mainstream media for them to believe it.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But MSM, we all know that it's just, they're going to feed all the information that you don't want to know. That's what it is. Like when you read, if you read the paper, you're misinformed. If you don't read it, you're uninformed. It's like the old saying, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I get along. I really respect y'all's podcast. You know, I was born in Merced, California.
Yeah.
My Nana lived in Castroville for years. I had family lived in Monterey. I mean, you guys know all those places.
Yeah, Central
you know,
Valley, like, man.
And my sister lives in San Jose, and she won't even speak to me, you know, because she says, you know, you're just a crazy right wing kook, and I feel like
overboard.
I'm not because
man
I was always a liberal. I was always a liberal.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, you know, if you had the beliefs of the Obama's first presidential campaign, you'd be called alt-right right now, you know?
Well, and you're right. Exactly. That's the thing. That's what's crazy is like, it's everything is the Overton window has shifted so much that people can't even see. They can't even see.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
The crazy thing to me is that whole mentality though, like you said about your sister, like won't even talk to me, you know? Everybody I know besides two people I can think of off the top of my head that are lean really liberal are like that. They don't want to hear it. If you bring up any talking point that's not the narrative that they want to hear, they just shut it down. There's no more conversation. Like, yeah. I have my friend Ben, very liberal compared to me, and him and I can talk and we can agree to disagree, and you know there's people like Deborah who, you know, maybe liberal, but they're willing to at least listen to the other side and kind of, you know, make their own decisions. But I feel like people more and more are just spoon fed what the left wants to spoon feed them, and they just buy it hook, line, and sinker. And if you think something different, you're a bad person.
Yeah. I've experienced that. I have people in my life that they know that the mainstream media is corrupt. They know that the mainstream media is bought and sold by big pharma and Chinese influencers. They know that the coronavirus is a fucking game, but they don't care as much as they care about being left alone. They just want the abuse to stop so they can go to work and they can get back to normal. They don't understand yet that there is no more getting back to normal, that they're exactly right. And the new normal is the new normal. And they are not, they're not happy to comply. They're happy to just be able to get to work and feed themselves.
Well, yeah, and Dean, I think we should probably quit calling it the new normal, because it's obviously the new world order.
That's what it is, for sure.
It's very obvious.
Yeah.
That's when we know this, but like this particular person I'm speaking of can't fathom that. This person's outlook is so fine-tuned to the here and now, right now. Stop hurting me, please. I'm running out of money. I'm running out of time. They don't even want to think about life outside of Portland or the state or the country. They can't imagine. They know that there's probably a conspiracy. They know that there's probably a whole bunch of billionaires that are all in line to fuck us over and take all of our shit. They know they can't stop it. They don't care about trying to stop it. They just hope that it will stop. And so that's a different kind of an impasse that I'm finding myself in with people. That it's not that they don't believe what we're saying. They've seen the documents. They've read the receipts. It's just that they're on the verge of black pill, where I think more of us, they're right on the verge of black pill. And that's like incredibly damaging to them psychologically.
Well, what do you guys think about Bill Gates, the report of Bill Gates coming out and buying up a bunch of farmland in Louisiana, you know, and then people are like, well, it's not a big deal. He means well.
Well, he owns a huge percentage of Monsanto. So, I mean, those two go hand in hand.
Well, doesn't Bill Gates have a whole, like a seed vault in Sweden or some shit, like under,
yeah.
I mean, really, if you weren't being nefarious and then you're like, hey, I just bought a bunch of land and I have a seed vault. Well, to me, I'm like, well, where are we going with this?
Yeah. Well, the media is going to spin it that Bill Gates, as he is known, is the greatest philanthropist who's ever lived. And he's going to donate all that farmland to the most disenfranchised of our population, which are, you know, of course, black and brown, the black and brown community, wherever they live, whatever that means. That's another angle. You know, we're talking about a philanthropist. He's not an evil mad scientist. He's not an oligarch. He's not part of the New World Order. He's a philanthropist. And that's what people like this individual I'm speaking of, that's what they know. They know that because they hear that over and over again. They don't really believe it. They know he's up to something, but they can't prove it. They just want the abuse to stop.
Well, I'm already equating Jeff Bezos with Dr. Evil. So who is who's Bill Gates? Who's Bill Gates?
Who's Bill Gates?
I mean, Jeff Bezos is obviously Dr. Evil, right?
Yeah, they look kind of alike.
I can concur with what you're saying about, you know, people just wanting to be left alone. I mean, a lot of times, you know, you think about the problem. Yeah, you see all the stuff that's happening. You feel it. You see it. You know something's not right. But at the same time, you're just like, man, I just want to go to work.
Yeah,
I just want to go do my thing. Just leave me alone. The problem's too big. No one's ever going to solve it. We've been trying for years and nothing ever changes. Just the heads keep changing and we keep thinking, you know, what does Jason call it? Hopium. We're all on hopium, thinking that, you know, all right, is this going to be it? Is he going to do the insurrection act? And it's like, we're always on the edge waiting for something to happen that never happens.
Well, and this is why I respect what Adam's doing, because he's taken everything into his own hands. Your farmstead, you know, you're homesteading, you're creating your own reality, because we can never count on anyone. Like Sam Tripoli says, you can't count on anyone to rescue you. You got to rescue yourself. You know, it's very interesting what we're going through right now. That's for sure.
Hey, Moto E over there. In Denver, what's the climate What's the climate like in Denver?
Dude, super freaking dry, man. Like, I'm no meteorologist or nothing like that. I'm just a native. I tell you this much though, haven't seen that much snow or that much rain. It's not like it rains in the wintertime here, but yeah, it's, you know, it's, I don't know what it's like in the rest of the fucking world. Excuse my language, Deborah, my apologies. I don't know what it's like in the rest of the world, but at least here, man, it's been like mild and dry.
How about the climate?
How about the social social climate?
Hang on
ecological climate.
Let me talk to my friend Mr. Mark here a second. I'll get you all informed. Oh my goodness. I'll tell you this much, man. As we talk about these individuals that you said, you know, they understand, like they could hear, but they just want to stay inside the world. Like they don't want to go out and they don't want to go explore. They just want everything to go back to normal. Dude, Denver used to be a really kick-ass city, man. Like this is where I'm from. I used to love it. It was good. It was good. And then after we legalized weed, man, like slowly but surely, like initially it was just a bunch of good misfits that moved into the city, you know, like, hey man, I love smoking weed. I'm from Missouri. Let me come over to this town. All right, cool. Yeah, that's awesome. But this day and age, dude, Oakland that was saying, yeah, man, like I can't go out in public and like voice my opinion. Like, yo, I got to keep my opinion down. I got to keep quiet on this because that's straight up what it is here, man. Like everybody, you 3 a.m. You're drunk. You're going out to walk your dog. You put on a mask for what? Come on, get out of here. Not only that, it's, dude, I'll tell you personally what really pisses me off about Denver. Every, like, cool, elections, grand scale. Yeah, there's nothing we could do about it. But on a local level, hopefully, no, every single tax raise passed. Every single one of them without anybody reading anything. And I just want to chalk it up to the majority of these people are fucking morons. They just don't read anything. It's a sad state of affairs. I bought a condominium outright in cash back in 99. And as you've seen, Adam, like property values have skyrocketed. So I'm selling it. I'm going to have it sold by the end of January. I got a buddy who lives in a tropical island region. I don't want to name where, but he's selling.
Is it Vin Armani, Saipan?
yeah. I don't know. Just Denver, man. It's cool. Like if you're young and like you're on like the CNN stream, you know, where it's just like, hey, man, yeah, just take the shot. Everything will go back to normal. Just take the shot, you know. But if you're somebody that thinks like us, you're a rarity here.
Well, I can say that I left Denver 7 years ago and I saw what was going to happen. And so I came down to Houston because I had a job opportunity and I saw what was going to, I saw it like the forest through the, I don't even know how I saw it, but I knew what was happening and I had to leave and I put my house up on the market and I sold it for $100,000 in cash, more than what I was asking, in 6 hours. And as soon as I did that, I said, I'm never going back. I'm never going back. There's no way.
Yeah.
You know, it's just interesting how things move so fast. You know,
yeah, we had a realtor friend tell us that houses in my neighborhood in like, I guess, Portland in general, and then especially out, I live pretty much in like just a different part of Portland, but it's a different town and a different county. So you don't have to pay like all these stupid social justice warrior taxes, like the art tax, and
not yet,
yeah, no. And
the art tax,
yeah, but
just for the record, I have never, ever, ever paid the art tax, never once.
Yeah,
but art is
a real thing.
But yeah, like so, they're like putting stuff on the market for under value and inducing bidding wars, and stuff's going for like $90,000 over the asking price.
Yeah, that's what realtors do, though. That's just part of the realtor game.
Yeah.
So there's a, speaking of real estate real quick, I just read an interesting article. I probably should forward it over to you, Adam. Maybe I'll put it on the show notes of the next show. But there's a whole new thing because there's a realtors association. It's not like a union, but it's the place that you have to, it's the place where you go to get your license to do real estate.
Yeah. And
they have a whole new protocol that they're setting into place. to protect buyers from hate speech. And that basically it shakes out like this, that if at any time, if you're a realtor and you have a license through this organization, which is the only place to get your license, if at any time in your life, professional or not, personal or not, you do something or say something in any way to anyone that could be interpreted as hate speech, that person who is offended can make a complaint to this organization and they can penalize you up to and including revoking your license to sell real estate.
You gotta be kidding me.
And it's
you gotta be kidding me.
It's couched in the language of inclusiveness, as it always is. And the inclusiveness, the champion of this is this clearly, obviously gay man, which is fantastic. I'm happy for him. But the way that they write it in the written language is that it's protect, you know, to protect LGBTQ XPKKKIA rights. But when you hear the realtors discuss it in person on their little Zoom meetings and stuff, it's all about BLM. It's all about offensive hate speech, BLM type stuff. So it's an interesting shift, because my girlfriend flips real estate. She's an amazing realtor. She has a whole clientele and she's been doing it for about 15, 20 years. And she and I, you know, we've got this house and everything. And she's basically during this whole last year, she's like, well, until the real estate market becomes completely corrupted by all this mind control, things are probably going to be okay in the end, because that's hundreds of billions of dollars wrapped up every day, transferring every day in real estate. That's where the real money is, residential and commercial, specifically commercial. But now this mind control is seeping into that. And this realty license organization is all on board and pushing it. So in essence, I mean, the people that you're using, perhaps Emoto to sell your house, my girlfriend, like, if the climate was such that and her profile was such, or your person's profile is such that they have a following, they have a clientele, or I mean, so let's just say rhetorically, they you know, there's a guy who wants to buy a house. His skin color may be different than the person who's selling the house, or the person
that's perfectly fine
who's doing it. Oh yes, it's perfectly fine until the guy says, I don't want to live in Chinatown. And so then the realtor is like, okay, well, we're not going to, you know, here's these houses. Well, those houses are way over my budget. You must be a racist. And that's how it starts. And then the complaints roll in. And then that realtor then is basically on a firing squad. You know, it's
pretty nasty. That's a sad situation, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just to give a throwback, rest in peace, Patrice O'Neill.
Hell yeah.
He's an old big-ass comic. He said one time on a radio show, he was like, what's wrong with hate speech? Why can't I hate you? You know? I mean, come on, man.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry to derail everything.
No, it's all good. Yeah, I'm done with that. But that's just an interesting thing. And I saw that article reading the show notes, not even mentioned really in the show of No Agenda. I think it was like two shows ago. I just going through the show notes, looking at all the other stuff that's not mentioned. And it was just in there. And then I passed it off to my lady, and then she passed it off to her main lenders and her main brokers. And everyone was like, holy fuck. Oh, I heard about this. And like, it's already in the lexicon. It's already in the community. They're already having to prepare for it. And that could completely change the game.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. 100%. How dare you have a personality?
How dare you have an opinion? How dare you try to sell property to your...
The balls.
How dare you try to broker a deal between someone who can afford something and someone who can't? And that's what it's going to come down to. It's like, oh, you're telling me that I can't afford this house that I clearly don't qualify for? You must
Right. Did we learn nothing from The Big Short?
You must be a racist. You must be a sexist. You must be a homophobe. And Islamophobe. You must be, you know...
I identify as somebody who can afford this home.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Hey, guys, we got somebody else joining the meeting. My buddy Casey, a.k.a. the Lunatic Dolphin, entered the meeting.
Casey? Hey, Casey.
What's happening?
What's going on, man? You in Oakland?
Yeah.
All right. We got two West Oaklands. West side. What part?
Like Dogtown area.
Got it.
Yep. Down by Home Depot, Emeryville.
Yeah, gotcha. How's it looking down there?
Wet.
Yeah.
Got lots of homeless camps.
Yeah, a lot of homeless camps, huh? Yeah, last time I went down and stayed at Jeff's house. Last time I was there, probably about a little less than a year and a half ago, and I was over by Tacos Sinaloa. It looked like the Manila, Philippines over there, man. It was fucking crazy, dude. Like, I don't know.
Nuts.
Yeah.
There's camps everywhere. Like, for some reason, none of them are dying. Like, they're just growing. The camps are just growing, you know?
Isn't that interesting?
More of them.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. No, homeless COVID deaths.
They got
up. Nobody's getting sick.
And I'm at the same liquor store as them fucking every day. I'm sure I have some of their money in my pocket, you know?
Yeah, no shit. They got
up. Well, you guys are lucky because down here in Texas, the bars are still open. So we're still doing the bar thing.
Yeah.
Extra jealous.
Here they have they've cordoned off like parking lots and stuff as like designated like COVID safe space homeless encampments. Have you seen those, Dean?
Is there anyone actually in there?
Yeah, there's tents in there. By, you know, that like walking bridge that goes from like McLaughlin over to the waterfront on the west side? Big like suspension bridge thing, down over by there by like Water Avenue. They're all down there by OMSI.
Hmm. That's interesting. I remember when this first thing was kicking off in Portland, there was a big push to turn the Portland Convention Center into a 500-bed homeless shelter. And it was just a little article in the Portland Tribune. And it was interesting. I was like, wow, 500-bed homeless shelter. That's huge. You know, lots of money being poured into renovating the convention center to do this. And then about a week goes by and I started noticing that all the homeless that were around my neighborhood weren't there anymore. This was right when the first lockdowns in Portland were starting, like back in late March. And so my lady and I, we jumped in the truck. I just bought this pickup and we go driving around and there's no homeless people anywhere. And we're like, this is weird. Are they all at the convention center? And so we drove down to the convention center. And right across the street under the freeway bridge, there's a bunch of camps and the convention center is closed. There's no personnel, nothing. And so we're just like, that's interesting. So this is like about a week or so after this announcement that it's now open. This big thing is happening. There's no homeless people in there. There's no homeless people anywhere. There's only a few camps in front of the place under the bridge. And then about another week or so goes by, and this is when I delivered mail. I was delivering mail, and there's a bunch of regular homeless guys on my route. And I asked this guy, I was like, hey, man, where is everybody? And he's like, oh, they're just kind of hiding out. I was like, is anyone at the convention center? And he's like, no, there's no one's going there. But that story just came and passed like a fart in the wind. There's never been another word about that convention center place or where the money went or if it was ever even really opened or if it was ever even really renovated.
But the money was all spent on it.
But the money was all spent. And that happens all the time in Portland. I think you probably know a little bit about that, Adam, but that shit happens all the time. All the efforts to house the houseless and the hundreds of millions of dollars that go into buildings.
It's a huge industry that people get rich off of.
It's a huge scam. And you drive around and no one's in these shelters for a couple of reasons. The number one, first primary reason is that most of these shelters require you to enter and exit sober. That's a huge
I'm fucked.
Thing. Yeah. they don't want you to go in there and smoke meth or drink. Or smoke weed or smoke cigarettes even. So who the fuck is motivated to go in there? No one's going to go in there. And then
can be homeless fucking sober.
It's a lot like a mission where you have to like wait and then you have to be in there by a certain time, like 7 p.m. And then you got to be out like the next day or you have to meet all these little requirements, get this kind of pass card. You got to sign up for shit. And most of the homeless people that I know of, and I know a handful of them, quite a few, they're not interested at all in having any sort of record because a lot of them They're homeless by choice, not because they got fucked out of the 2008 housing crisis, although there's a large amount of that. Most of these people are homeless by choice because they do not want to be a part of the system at all. They found a bigger, larger, more slippery freedom in being fucked out of their mind on drugs, or just making friends with their mental illness or whatever, and subsisting as crushing and grinding as that life may be. They found a way to accommodate it. And I just think that's something that these massive bureaucrats, these assholes and city planners, either they acknowledge and refuse to believe it's real, or they use it as a scapegoat to funnel hundreds of millions of dollars. I think that the thing is probably the latter. I think they're using the homeless people as a scapegoat.
Absolutely.
To funnel tons of money. If they
let everyone put a tent on the street, I mean, what else do you expect to happen? I mean, you're going to give up. If you're allowed to put a tent on the street and walk away and just be like, it's whatever. I mean, what else do you expect to happen, really?
From the people that pay to have property there?
I mean, I'm just saying, like, as a homeless person, if you're just allowed to put a tent on the street and then you can do whatever the hell you want, what else do you expect? I mean, the people who have no drive, no reason to live or whatever,
they do have drive and they do have reason to live. They have addictions, they have angles and grifts to maintain every day. Not only that, but they have their own reputation, they have their own hierarchies. It's a whole nother society that you and I are a little bit disconnected from because we're over here in this society. It's a lot like a prison system. There's angles and grifts, and there's hustles, and there's addictions to feed every single day. And there's ways to make money without selling your ass. There's ways to make money without stealing. But these are things that need all-time, full-time maintenance, just like a job.
Yeah. And anytime you put someone in a position like that, there's always someone who's going to figure out a way. They're going to figure out a way, just like in prison. They're going to sell ramen or fucking cigarettes one by one, or
human ingenuity. Human ingenuity equates to innovation and capitalism in every degree. And it's beautiful. I think it's beautiful.
Meth is a powerful drug.
They may be the most free of all of us.
I know.
Honestly, I mean, they're
You're not kidding, dude. You're not kidding, man. Yeah. When people were fucking siphoning gas out of my car, I was like, these assholes are fucking able to do this. And I was jealous.
They don't ever seem to die. They just keep going and going.
I know.
Well, I think we're about to come on an interesting time because we've been seeing it down here in Texas where things are okay, but there's a lot of people's cars getting stolen, houses getting broke into, rims being removed in the middle of the night.
Non-emergencies.
It's just one of those things that it's only going to get worse until you can figure out how to stop it, but it's only going to get worse. And I saw a bunch of things today.
Oh, it's going to get a lot worse.
People's trucks going missing. I mean, it's crazy. Rims? Dude. Talk about maybe
been a ton of Priuses with catalytic converters that have been stolen.
Catalytic converters full of copper.
Yeah. That's been going on in Oakland forever.
They make you have to have an ID to sell metal here.
Yeah.
And they made that so obviously fucking to try and stop them from fucking whatever, stealing or whatever.
Yeah, it's funny. There's a down by where Casey lives, there used to be this super big, gnarly recycling center. In California, in Oregon, you take your cans to the store and they give you 5 cents a piece for them back.
10 cents.
In California, you pay for it. You pay 5 cents for every can that you buy or bottle, but they don't give it back to you. You have to take it to a recycling center and they weigh it for you.
You're gonna be like like Kramer trying to figure out how to take it.
Take it across state lines, but they had to. It was gnarly. It was down there, down in West Oakland, and all these gay dudes from San Francisco moved over there and bought houses. Jeff and I know a couple of them, and they bought houses in the hood and fixed them up all nice and stuff. and then started complaining about, like, gentrified it and started complaining about the recycling center, get it shut, like, lead this big crusade and get it shut down. And then now it's just people that lived in that economy have no way to make a living. So like car thefts and like break-ins and stuff just went through the roof.
Yeah,
because they didn't have a way to make money anymore.
All of it non-emergency.
You can't even go to the recycling center. You can't walk up to a recycling center in Oakland.
Yeah.
Or that was the last one in Oakland. Like, you have to have a car now.
Yeah, so, yeah. Same here in just Denver.
They took them out of the game. Fucking.
So you have to be like a Chinese guy with like a super fucked up like 1993 Toyota T100 to take all your recycling in.
Yeah,
10-foot siding on the side.
You guys know who I'm talking about. Yeah, the plywood siding.
Yeah, cardboard stacked 20 feet high.
Yeah.
Well, what's going to happen when Agenda 2030 kicks in and we really can't own anything? And anytime you want to buy something new, they're going to put a new restriction on us. So where you have to take a ride share.
Yeah.
We know it's coming. We know it's coming.
Wilma, come here.
It's coming, but I still think that there's a lot of wiggle room between now and then. Yes. I think that this is one of the greatest times ever to be alive, to just kind of to grab onto the wave of innovation and try to find innovative ways to be able to create your own stuff. Like, you may.
And I agree with you. I agree with you because I've been buying Bitcoin.
So this is the thing that makes me think about what's actually going to get people, like maybe Deborah's neighbors, maybe this individual who I was speaking about earlier, to actually realize that they have personal power is when they come after your shit. Right now they're coming after your money a little bit. You know, you can still go to work. They're making dividing lines between essential, non-essential. They're fucking making everything up. But I think that when they actually come down to separating families and coming after your shit, and when trucks are showing up at your house to your property to take you away from your stuff or your family, I think that's when people are finally gonna get it.
It's still gonna be too late, though. It's still gonna be too late because we'll be the first ones.
It's still it'll be way too late. But that's what I'm afraid to say. But I think that's what it's gonna take. You know, when you no longer can see your kid. I mean, I'm a divorced dad. I have almost 7-year-old little girl. We share custody. Everything is copacetic, and I'm not paying child support, but I pay half of her tuition for daycare, and I give her a home and all this other shit, and anything that she needs, she gets from me and her mom, and we have this kind of agreement, although the courts don't recognize that, but we have to do the footwork for that. But I guess that's a little maybe too personal. But what I'm trying to say is when they say to me that, I'm sorry, Dean, you no longer have access to your daughter because you can't prove that you're healthy.
Yeah.
No, that's, to me, that's my worst nightmare.
Yeah, because you don't have the because you don't have the COVID passport or something like that.
Yeah, where her mom will gladly take the shot, gladly take the test if needed. You know, I can jump in a little bit here.
So my kids live in Montana with their mother. My oldest is 16 and my youngest is 13. And I haven't seen them in a year now because their mom says she won't send them down here without a vaccine. And I'm down here in the strong arm of Texas where a man doesn't mean shit. A dad doesn't mean nothing in Texas. You can ask anybody who lives in Texas. That's just how it is.
A dad doesn't mean anything anywhere, dude.
It really doesn't. And it is sad, but it's interesting because I went to the lawyer and I was like, well, the ex-wife says she's not going to send him down here without a vaccine. And they're like, they just looked at me and they're like, well, that's just how it's going to be.
Yeah. Dude. Throw their hands up. Deal with really? It, Dad.
That's where we're at, though. And that's where I'm piling on where you are, Dean. Like,
it puts the onus on you to go up there.
Yeah.
But if you did that, would she have you in the same household?
No. I mean, that's long gone. I mean, my kids are grown now, and it's been, I mean, they moved, they moved here from Texas to Montana probably about 6 years ago. So
don't get me wrong. I'm not saying go back and make amends. I'm just saying if you needed to see your kid, if you want to, which I'm sure you do, it puts the onus on you to travel there.
Well, I got that. I don't know. I'm in a unique situation because I'm a business owner. I can't really necessarily leave. It is how it is right now.
Well, it sounds like
I can't leave right now. I got to run this business.
Do you have young kids? You said your oldest is 16, but you have some youngins.
No. My youngest is 13. My oldest is 16. They're
they're fine. They're all grown up. They don't need you for shit.
Hey, man, but I can still commiserate my shit. Come on, man.
No, I got you, man. I appreciate it because that's exactly the situation. That's that's kind of a domestic sized, pilled out version of this larger problem that I have.
You know? Yeah.
Whereas, like, I have no problem with my ex-wife. We just don't like each other. You know, we're philosophically diametrically opposed in almost every fundamental way, except for when it comes to our kid. She'll never, ever deny me access to my kid, but the fucking state will.
That's where I was jumping in. The strong arm of Texas is standing in between me and the kids.
And as soon as the nation, which we're entering into now, is following the orders of the United Nations or whoever, World Health or World Bank, EMF, the fucking Klaus Schwab. As soon as these assholes dictate that, well, everyone has to have a health passport, which is on its way. We all know this.
Yep.
What happens to those divorced dads who won't do it? They're going to shit all over us.
So that's exactly why I was bringing it up.
Don't care about us. And so that's the worst possible outcome. They can, they can take my job. They can make it hard so I have to eat out of cans. Maybe I have to grow my own food, chop my own, do everything, whatever. I could do all that stuff. But if they try to take my kid, that's when there will be bullets. That's when there will be armed resistance. And I think that I can speak for millions of dads who would say the same thing. And I think that's a really quiet, silent, I don't know if it's a majority, but it is a quiet, silent population of people that are being pushed. And if we get pushed to that level, that's when it's going to be violent. And if we're talking about revolution, and if we have to take back our country, our freedom, our sovereignty, our blah, 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 none of these, there's never, ever, ever been a peaceful revolution. It always starts and ends with violence. Well, it starts with violence and it ends with bureaucrats having tea together, drawing up new borders.
Or we can throw the tea back into the harbor.
Yeah. That's kind of a question I kind of wanted to ask earlier in the show. What do you think it would take to make Americans take up arms? Because I think if you would have asked people last year or 5 years ago what it would take, they would have said things that have like already happened 6 months ago.
Yeah.
What do you think it's finally going to take?
Dividing families.
Yeah.
Okay. That's just my opinion. What do you guys think?
I think for me, what it's going to take is if they throw me into that fucking re-education camp and there's no tortillas and rice and beans, I'm fucking pissed, dude.
But what if they have? What if they have tortillas and rice and beans? Would you be sated? Would that be a
good question, Dean?
That's the thing, because they already know everything about you, man. They know
exactly.
Hey, as long as it's a good tortilla, they can hold me off for a minute.
and then you're all sleepy and full and satisfied and all your needs are met. You don't own anything anymore.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to say, but I know I'm making light of it, but you know what? That's all we got right now.
No, we got to have fun with it for sure. What do you guys think? What do you guys think about what it's going to take to get people to take up arms? If that's because that we know that's what's coming eventually.
I'd like to hear the rest of the group.
What do you think, Jeff?
I don't know what it's going to take for me to actually be standing in front of my house with a firearm, but I'll tell you what I'm doing right now while we're on this meeting.
Hell yeah.
I see that.
reloading ammo.
Making bullets, baby.
Yeah. I got to get back to that. I'm almost out. Yes. Not really, but could have more.
Oh, you don't have anything. You lost it in the harbor.
Yeah, it all sunk last time I went to the beach.
What do you think, Casey?
I've been thinking about it. I'm not sure. Like, People in mass, I don't know. I can't picture a situation. I don't know. I can say why I would, but I think we probably all have the same answer to that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But I don't know. I don't see like I feel like they tried to incite that with the whole Capitol building freaking thing, whatever you want to call it, and then you know nothing happened because I think everyone knew it was obvious they were just trying to incite something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't
like
know what it would take for every mass taking up of arms.
When I saw, I don't know if you guys saw it, but I remember seeing that that video from Australia of the pregnant mother, the pregnant lady who was like, who had her, she was like getting ready to go to her ultrasound appointment, and like the public health officer and a cops or whatever came into her house unarmed and took her away because she'd made a Facebook post about a pro or an anti-mask like rally or something like that, and it came and took her away. So I don't know, like Matt, you're in Texas. What do you
watching, watching those people get ripped out of the fucking airport?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of places in America, like if a pregnant mother is getting arrested for making a Facebook post, I think that police aren't dumb enough to do that here. I'm sure there's some that would, but all in all, I think that's kind of a line in the sand for a lot of people. So
yeah, I don't think that would necessarily happen down here just because so many people are very family oriented, could I say?
Yeah.
But it is interesting to think about. I mean, I don't necessarily think that as many people would fight as you would think. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of people who are very gung-ho, but there are still so many people that just want to be comfortable and not go to jail.
They want to be left alone.
They just want to, exactly. They want to be left alone. They just want to live their regular life. And that's me too, you know, to an extent. But I'm willing to get out of town and build a well, and that's what I'm thinking about right now.
They've brainwashed all those people to just be happy with what they got. Whatever, you know.
Yeah. People want comfort, not freedom now. That's why they're building, that's why they're tearing down neighborhoods and building smart condos, you know.
Well, and that's how they were so smart to get us so comfortable. Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you don't even have to leave your house now. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, if you're a fucking lazy fuck.
People don't want a backyard. They want a house with every electronic in it, and no car, and you can order everything that you need to be delivered to you. So, well, guys, we're at
Pornhub.
Yeah, we're at an hour. Does anybody have any questions? Jeff, you're not allowed. Does anybody have any questions for Deborah?
Yeah, I do.
Wanting to ask, go for it, Dean.
I do. So, Deborah, what would it take for you at this point, with what you know, what you've been learning and experiencing with your relationship with Adam on the podcast? What would it take for you to lock out your husband, or say no, and really, really have a hardline resistance and unmovable resistance? Like, what kind of trauma would you have to endure to change in the way that you might feel is the worst possible thing? I don't know if that's a very clear question. What's your line in the sand? three words.
Gosh, that is a hard question, because I don't consider myself a very confrontational person. And I like things nice, and I like people to get along, and I want everybody to be on the same page and happy in each other's presence and blah, blah, blah. So the trying to imagine a world where I would have to make that decision and draw that line, it's hard to even fathom that I could do that.
Would you be able to be okay with hiding Adam in a small room that you had to build inside your house when they come for him?
I love Adam. I would do that for Adam. I would do that for you, Adam.
Even at the that disdain of your husband or
yeah.
or your neighbors?
Yeah. Yeah, I would. Fantastic. I would. I mean, you know.
Little Adam Frank.
I'm never going south of the Oregon border to that state again in my life. So
yeah. It'd be more like she'd be coming up there to you.
Yeah.
Now I just, you know, I can't imagine that it would have to come to that we'd have to make that choice, that we'd have to act in that way. And hopefully, you know,
it's happened before. It's hard to imagine, but we don't have to imagine it because we know it's already happened before.
In extremely well-mannered civilized societies.
Absolutely. Of people who just wanted to be left alone.
Yeah.
Well, they did that to the Japanese, didn't they? After the war, they rounded them all up and put them into
Oregon.
In Washington.
Oregon, Washington, and California. Montana, right. too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of these vaccine sites that they're wanting to build, they're dumping a bunch of money. And I think Biden just did an executive order to where they're going to build a bunch of vaccine sites now. And what are they going to do with those when they're done with them?
Going to move the homeless into them.
Yeah.
Oh, the homeless, yeah.
You know, along with all the other FEMA camps that are dispersed throughout the United States. I mean, you know, I don't know, man. What would you do, Deborah, if they pulled both of them and took them away?
I'd flip.
Would that be enough to mount your own, you know, army of digital soldiers and, you know, do what you got
to
do?
Would you take up arms? Would you learn to shoot?
I don't think so.
No? Mm-mm. That's the line in the sand, no guns?
I just don't know. I don't know. You know, if I allow myself to think far enough out in that direction, if I, you know, imagine that people were coming to, you know, hurt my children or hurt the people that I love for these bullshit reasons, I don't know what I would do. I just.
It's something to consider.
Yeah.
Especially with the equal consideration of the forces that would do that have been trained to use arms on you, on anyone. Their job.
Well, isn't it? I think to me, isn't it weird how we think, like as Americans, how like we'd be so disappointed if that came to us, but all over the whole rest of the entire world, everybody knows who the Empire is.
Yeah.
And we go all over and we just wreck shop.
Yeah.
It's very sad because
it's not we, guys, it's the government. You know what I mean. We're not, I know. But yeah, we're the bad guys. They're the bad guys all to everybody else. You know,
spreading democracy.
They're the Empire.
We spread democracy to the entire world, and anywhere it's decided to be done, and I'm going to just say it like that. Whenever it's decided to be done like that, you guys know what's happening.
Yeah.
People are going to die. And that's just how it is. And it's very sad. I think that's why a lot of people were behind Trump, you know, because at least there were no new wars. And if that's all you could say, then I'll stand behind that.
But
I'm good with
that. Yeah, that's not all you can say, though. You can say that.
I know.
There were no new wars. We learned a lot more about China.
We learned a lot.
The media has been fully exposed beyond any recognition. And that's not just the media, but like media, academia, Hollywood, all of the elites have all 100%. Had their asses shown.
Hollywood's
through the last
dead.
4 years because of this crazy pageant host, this reality TV star. I think that's one of the most ironic things that's ever happened in the world. Like the underdog.
You know what's weird to me is that you can say the name Hollywood to someone, and I mean, there's many people I talk to that know that that's like some sort of magic wood that was around. Like it's Like, people know that it's all just bullshit. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's funny because I used to say the best thing about Trump was that he just eliminated and annihilated the Bushes and the Clintons off the face of the political climate. And then now they're all right back in there.
I know.
It's all the same guys. It's just John McCain and Dick Cheney back in there with different faces.
Yeah, but I think
that are different colors, you know.
It goes back to when, I mean, it goes back to the 50s at least, maybe before that.
No, it goes way.
I mean, you can see it. Dude, how did they get pictures of fucking George H.W. Bush like getting shot down in a fucking airplane in World War II?
Right.
Yeah.
The video of that.
Yeah. The same way they made pictures about the World's Fair buildings. They just painted it.
Exactly. Oh, I want to know more about that. Actually, Adam, dude, that fucking Tataria episode was awesome.
Yeah. We just scratched the surface. Yeah. Casey over there is super into it. So him and I have been talking a bunch about it. And I'm going to try, like, I, you know, like we talked mostly geopolitical stuff on this, but like doing that stuff and gets my mind off of it. And it's so much more interesting. And I hope that everybody, you know, cause I came to this whole thing through geopolitics. And then I just started listening to, you know, episodes like that would pop up on Tinfoil Hat or shows that I liked. And then I like really started listening to them, and man, it's wild. And I felt like spiritually and emotionally calm and weird and like, yeah, like halfway stoned after we did that Tartaria episode. Like it wasn't even like close to scratching the surface. And I know Casey's been looking into it a lot, and Dean has too as well, right?
Yeah, a little bit here and there. I've been kind of touching on it for about maybe 2 years, but it's a big one. It's a deep, deep, deep hole. And
yeah, so
Adam, there's not that much info out there.
Yeah,
we through a lot of shit.
The thing I want to know about are those giant organs.
Those giant organs is what interests me because I'm a musician.
Yeah, I know if you go back and listen to one of the Tinfoil Hats, if he's got his stuff back up on YouTube, he had, I think, Red Bricks and Annabelle, who was on our podcast, on, and he and they have like visual aids. I think they show a lot of the buildings and the organs and stuff like that. So
John Levi, L-E-V-I.
Yeah.
He has a channel on YouTube. It seems like there's hundreds of videos all about Tartaria shit. And it's all visual. Like, he goes to all these cities and films the buildings. Like, he's been to Salt Lake City and SF, and he takes a drone up and he talks really slow. You can look here at all of this.
He's the Ross Band of Tataria.
Yeah.
There's so many videos.
Have you guys checked out anything from Anatoly Fomenko? Has that guy been on your radar?
No.
He's got this new chronology thing. You could check him out on Wikipedia. I just remembered his name a moment ago, but yeah, Anatoly, Anatoly, Fomenko, Fomenko. He's got this whole new chronology, this whole new history of the Earth. I don't know if it's Tartaria specifically with that word, but it's definitely something to look into. I know that before she passed away, Tracy Twyman was doing a lot of work researching his old writings. He's an old mathematician, and he basically says that according to Fomenko, the written history of humankind goes back only about 800 AD. So he just has this. Wikipedia on the thing, yeah. But. but yeah, just check out Anatoly Fomenko. I'll send this link over to you, Adam, and you can share it around or whatever.
Okay, maybe I'll put it in the show notes.
Check it out. It's pretty cool.
according to the reset, the shit, it happens, I guess, every 400 years or some shit.
Like some sort of event, like a mud flood or something like that?
Yeah, like a mud flood. And the last one that happened in the, you know, in the 1800s, for some reason, it didn't destroy all the buildings and shit.
Okay. Okay. And
the survivors just moved in.
Yeah, it's so exciting.
Rewrote fucking everything.
Yeah, yeah, we didn't.
It's giving me chills just talking about it.
Yeah, yeah. The thing that The thing we didn't touch on, I forgot to bring up to those guys when we were doing our episodes, was like the gigantic orphan trains, like just all the orphans that showed up places.
Are you talking John about Levi episode
26? 25 or 26, yeah.
25, yeah, my apologies. Yeah.
John Levi has a video on the orphan train.
Okay, I'll definitely look into it.
Yeah, he fucking... Dude, yeah, it goes so... And it's like, yeah, I've barely scratched the surface. Like,
yeah, and it's...
Like, you know?
Yeah.
It's insane.
All right, well, does anybody else have any final questions for Deborah they want to ask?
I absolutely do.
Okay, go for it, Paul.
Deborah, I since I was invited on to this beautiful podcast that you have over here, thank you very much for taking your daughter's husband his advice into getting a podcast. I definitely do have a genuine question for you.
Okay.
Could you tell me more about that plant behind you and how long that's been around?
I'm surprised gorgeous. You can see it in the dark.
I only saw a shadow.
I don't know what it is, but I've had it since it was that big.
Oh wow.
And
you still don't know its name?
About a foot.
I don't need to know that stuff. I just know. there were two of them in there, and one of them did, I had to remove it because it didn't appear to be doing well. But this guy, all of a sudden, he's like almost, I have a high ceiling. And if I had a normal ceiling, it would be up to the ceiling.
Oh,
but
wow.
I have a high ceiling. So, yeah. Thank you for noticing.
Dude, it's gorgeous.
Thanks. Okay.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
No, I'm good. Thank you, Deborah.
Jeff, do you have an
you guys are doing such a great job.
It's killer hearing Deborah's voice. And seeing her, I don't know, it's funny.
Awesome, man. Jeff, do you have an appropriate question that you might want to ask? I can't hear you.
Yep. Oh.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, I know I'm not allowed to ask any questions, but... Okay. And that is that my offer to take Deborah to the shooting range stands whenever she's ready to start.
Okay. Okay.
What would
I
you
might
start
take
her
you up on it. I
what
might
would
take
you
up
start
on
her
it.
Out with? The 308?
Yeah.
The 30-06?
Hey,
laugh
the
away.
Plug.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but laugh away.
I could see her shooting your Mini 14, man. I think she'd look good on behind that thing.
Absolutely. It's a classic.
Yeah, I love those things. Well, guys, I want to thank everybody so much for coming on and doing the hard work for me today. But this was really great, and it was kind of short notice, but this is something I definitely like to keep doing, and we'll definitely advertise them. You know, farther in the future, maybe do one or two a month. And I really, really appreciate it. If you guys want to hear anything or know about certain stuff, let us know. If you know any good guests that we could probably get, let us know too. And everybody here, please stay in contact. I'd love to talk to you all again in the future. So.
Hell yeah. I think this was really, really cool, man. These are really great shows. I like these just off the cuff round table discussions with real people with no agenda, with no hard emotions. I mean, we all have feelings and we all have thoughts about stuff. I think every one of us are God given valuable star seeds and we deserve a little bit of a piece of this. So I think it's been really cool.
I got a good name for this podcast. So three of us have been on Union of the Unwanted like one time, or you've been on a couple times, but we don't get invited anymore. How about we call it Union of the Uninvited?
That's all right with me.
All right.
Yeah.
The couldn't cut it trio.
Yeah. All right, guys. I'm going to call it there. Thank you, everybody, for being on, and stay in contact. Love you all.
Yeah. Really cool meeting everyone, man. Much love. Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
See you, Casey. See you, everybody. Bye, guys.
Bye.
See you guys.